G'day listeners, Jono here just to let you know that Truth To You is now publishing a free monthly newsletter containing highlights and commentary from forthcoming Torah Pearls programs with Nehemiah Gordon and Keith Johnson, as well as updates on recent guests and topics. If you would like to receive the monthly newsletter, simply go to truthtoyou.org, that's truth2letteru.org, and register your email address. Listening to Truth To You with Jono, and joining me in the Truth To You studio today is my beautiful, lovely wife, Hani.
Hello.
How are you going?
Pretty good.
Nice to have you in the studio.
Lovely to be here.
And you're in the studio now. Usually, your field of expertise and studies is in ancient history and religion, but that's not so much why you're here in the studio today. What we're going to be talking about is kind of health related.
Yes.
And it has something to do with the fact that the kitchen of recent months has been resembling that of a scientific laboratory, perhaps more than a kitchen in some ways, in some areas. And to help us, our guest today, to help explain this, is Devorah of Cultured Karaite. The website is culturedkaraite.blogspot.com. Devorah, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Hani and Jono. It's good to be with you. Very good to be with you.
I'm very excited to have you on the program because we have a lot to talk about. And you and Hani have a lot in common, don't you?
We do. We've been speaking quite a bit about it. Excited about it, actually.
Oh, I think more than excited about it. Dev, you've really spurred me on. It's been wonderful getting to know you just via Facebook and through your blog and emails and everything. And you've really inspired me with my fermenting life.
There it is, her fermenting life. Everyone's now going, ew. before we explain that, Dev, can I ask you to explain, because am I to understand that there is another Karaite in the world besides Nehemiah Gordon? Is that what I'm to understand?
At least one. In the United States, we have part of our defense system is the Marines, and their slogan is the proud, the few. And that actually should be the Karaite slogan.
The proud, the few. I like it. Well, would you be so kind just to remind everybody? I know a lot of people, a lot of listeners understand who the Karaites are, but can you just nutshell it for us, for those who don't know?
Certainly, I'll be glad to try. I'm a Jew, and my faith is Karaism, and Karaite Judaism is that we are. The word actually means scripturalist. So what we do is we go by the Tanakh as written. We don't use things that are written by men. So, you know, some of the other forms of Judaism have extra biblical writings, and we don't go by those. We only go by the Tanakh as written.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And
sure.
And it's grand to have you on the program because of that, and I really appreciate your time. Your website, as I mentioned before, culturedkaraite.blogspot.com, culturedkaraite.blogspot.com.
We should make mention that the cultured has actually got a K rather than a C.
It's a K rather than a C. There's something else you have in common with Nehemiah Gordon, whose website is Karaite Corner with a K as well. You guys can't spell, and
that's exactly right.
And that's what it is. Now, before we go any further, let me just see if I can define this. Cultured Karaite, is that to say that you're a very cultured person with wonderful etiquette and marvelous class and just an air of how should I say?
I don't know.
You don't know.
Well.
The important thing is that at this point in the program, I get to use a different accent,
which he loves to do.
Which I love to do. So, cultured. What do you mean by cultured?
Well, honestly, I'm from Texas, and a lot of people say that Texans lack manners completely. So, it's not culture. It would be that culturing vegetables and culturing dairy products is actually the way that you preserve them, actually the way my ancestors preserved their foods was with fermentation, or what's called culturing, because of the lactobacilli that are used, that happen actually in the process, they're actually little colonies or little cultures that group together and do absolutely wonderful things to dairy and to vegetables.
So, Deborah, where are these cultures?
They're everywhere. Right. I think that was one of the things that astounded me when I began pondering the ancient path that we're told about in Jeremiah 18. I began to ponder what all did that mean for my ancestors, because it couldn't have meant simply their faith. I mean, their day-to-day lives were ancient paths, and I really wanted to get into what that meant, and I began to realize that the way they had to preserve their food was through the fermentation and culturing of it. And they did, you know, dry some meat with salt. That's a definite thing too. But I began to investigate what this culturing, this fermentation was. And I read something from a book called Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon. Mm. And I sat there and read it, this one sentence basically over and over again. It astounded me. It excited me. I got tears in my eyes because it caused some realizations for me. And the sentence is, lactic acid is a natural preservative that inhibits putrefying bacteria. Starches and sugars in vegetables and fruits are converted into lactic acid by the many species of lactic acid producing bacteria, or what also is known as lactobacilli. These lactobacilli are ubiquitous, present on the surface of all living things, and especially numerous on leaves and roots of plants growing in or near the ground. Now, that may not excite you, but when I realized that our Creator, Jehovah, put something so healthful and so amazing everywhere and absolutely free, that actually not only preserves the food so that you have your food longer, and you the chances of you running out are less. So he took care of us in that manner, but he also caused the process to actually increase the value of the food being preserved.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
That is incredible. Isn't that absolutely spectacular?
I mean, it blesses me every time I even think about it.
Well, let's illustrate this for people, because I have to admit, Khani is the one that understands. She has the book Nourishing Traditions. Mm. When it comes to cultures and as you say, things that are freely available in the air to everybody, I mean, we're talking about a period of time which wasn't that long ago when people didn't have refrigeration, right? Mm.
Exactly.
And what did they do with their food to preserve it and things like that? Like just this morning on my breakfast, I had my usual 3 farm eggs on lettuce and spinach on
spelt
bread, not wheat. We're going to be talking about that another time as well. Spelt toast with and spread liberally over the top.
Kefir cream cheese
made from goat's milk. And I love it. And so what Khani has been doing, some of the things that we've been having of late is kimchi, which was introduced to us by Betz, Hanok Ben Isaac's wife.
Yes.
Very, very clever woman.
There's a recipe for that in Nourishing Traditions.
There's a recipe. Oh, that's right. That's where she got it, wasn't it?
Yes.
For that case, that's the kimchi. And, of course, from there she discovered the sauerkraut. Mm-hmm. I love both of these things. And kefir I've been putting in my banana smoothies, the milk kefir, and there's a number of things that, you know, Khani, you've been making. What else are some of those?
Well, it's really been Devorah who has really opened my eyes to more and more fermenting. I mean, basically, you do ferment anything you can get your hands on, don't you?
All right, I'm not coming to your house.
You can. That's what's so exciting about it, things that you really like. I just want to interject here because I fear that I could be a bad influence, because sometimes, and especially in my videos, I started off on the wrong foot by saying kefir. The word is actually kefir in Hebrew,
yes.
And it means lion, which I think that's pretty interesting given the health qualities of kefir.
Kefir. Yes.
There it is.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. But I just wanted to say about Nourishing Traditions and books like that, which is moving back to a more slow food movement. It's more of a paradigm shift, wouldn't you say, Dev?
It is extremely big, and a lot of people, unfortunately, it seems insurmountable to them, which is it really breaks my heart, because given some time, it all really comes together for you, especially taste-wise. Mm-hmm. I really can relate to people who first taste kefir or a fermented vegetable, and it's actually very sour tasting to them, very tart. And I understand that. But what's happened in our lives is we have found we're about 5 months down the road with this now, and we don't even taste that tartness anymore. Mm. It's actually our taste buds in modern times that are incorrect and need to be corrected back.
That's a very interesting thing that you say, Dev, because I've often mentioned on the program that when we realize the issues related with a high sugar diet.
Yes.
We started thinking about, not that we had a high sugar diet, or that we didn't think we did at the time. We look back and we think, well, yeah, I think we did. But we would have sugar in our tea or in our coffee or, and now that we've removed refined sugar from our diet, everything tastes sweet when it didn't
it
before,
does.
You know, and when you would have your tea or your coffee, for example, without sugar, you'd be like, oh, it's not right. It doesn't taste right. Now I taste it and I can taste that the milk is sweet.
Mm. And it is very sweet.
And so we retrain our taste buds, right?
We do. And it's acquired and it's retraining. I've often said that I believe if Adam were alive today and someone gave him a candy bar, I think he'd spit it out.
Oh, yeah,
I think it. I do. I think it would be very repugnant to him. I think that we've ruined ourselves for tasting things that are natural, and like Hani said, the slow food. It's so much better, and it's so much better tasting.
Now, Hani, you did mention the phrase slow food. Can you just explain? I mean, we need to understand slow food as opposed to what is known as fast food, right? Is this?
Mm. It's just basically having a mindset that food, preparing food doesn't not necessarily take 30 seconds at the counter in McDonald's.
Right.
I have a question for you. Do you find now that you're doing all this that your time in the kitchen is actually less?
Yes, I do. I do. Because, I mean,
isn't that
I spend,
amazing?
It is, because you can spend, you know, a few hours preparing all your ferments or your condiments and that sort of thing, and then they're there available for you in the fridge to eat. You don't have to prepare something each time.
That's what is my husband noticed it right off, that when we begin to ferment, I've got these wonderful jars of vegetables, and I even have some fruit chutney that I fermented, and mayonnaise that I fermented, and ketchup, and those things, and they're there. And we only have to prepare a few things during the week, and I mostly use the crock pot for that. Mm-hmm. And when I come home, my meat or chicken is done in the crock pot. I pull my jars out of the refrigerator and dinner's ready.
Well, that's right.
Nice.
I mean,
it's amazing.
Well, that's right. And fast food in the house, we have three children. So, I mean, children, you know, they want snacks in between meals and things like
they're
that.
Growing and
they're growing.
They're growing. Yeah.
And fast food in our house is a banana or an apple.
Or an apple, yeah. Or a carrot.
Things
yeah,
like that.
That's great.
Rather than, you know, a packet of chips or a chocolate or
a biscuit
or a biscuit
cookie
or
whatever
that sort of
it may
thing.
Be. I was just going to say, as you, just coming back a little bit, Deb, you mentioned how we need to retrain our taste buds. And it's not just our taste buds, but it's the way we think about food as well. Like, I'm just thinking a lot of people are probably listening to this going, ooh, fermented food, fermented with what? Are you talking about bacteria? What are you talking about? Is it like fungi growing in my food? What are you saying? I don't understand. It sounds really creepy and I don't want anything to do with it. But, of course, perhaps a more a food that we can relate to more on that sort of level. And tell me if this is on par. That is yogurt.
That's exactly correct. As a matter of fact, yogurt has approximately 3 to 4 different strains of lactobacilli in it. And actually, one of them starts off, I'm not, you know, a doctor or trained in that way, but one of them starts off with the word strepto, and it's not a, you know, streptococcus that's bad for you. There's many, many names for these types of lactobacilli, and yogurt has about 3 to 4 strains of those that actually causes the milk to become yogurt, and kefir has unknown amounts, but at least over 60 different types of lactobacilli and yeast that work in symbiosis. That's a new word to me as well, that enhances the milk, changes it, and is extremely so much more beneficial vitamin and mineral wise. It enhances what's already there, but it also changes it and makes those vitamins and minerals what's called bioavailable to your body. Right. You can drink a glass of milk and it's good for you, but there's going to be some minerals and things that you will miss because of the form that they're in. Maybe they don't, if they're in a large form, maybe they don't go through the cell wall, you mm-hmm. know, different things like that.
Sure.
That I'm, again, I'm not real educated that way. I've just read a lot about it. But in kefir, everything that's there, the amino acids, the minerals, the B vitamins are increased, and they're also changed to where all of it is, your body is able to get all of it and use all of it.
Okay.
It's amazing.
So am I to understand, let me see if I just get this right. You're saying that in yogurt, which everybody understands to be healthy and most people like, have it in one form or another, maybe throughout the week, contains three different types of cultures that are beneficial to us, that makes the yogurt healthy for us. But kefir has maybe over 60 from which we benefit. Is that what I understood you to say?
That's correct. Not only do they actually not know exactly how many, you know, how many more, because they have names for the different 60. There could even be some that have not even been named yet. Mm-hmm. And the interesting part of it is that no one knows where kefir grains come from. These little grains of lactobacilli, they actually predate recorded history.
I have to be honest. It kind of, actually, let me get back to the grains in just a second.
Okay.
I know that because I don't know much about this, but I have heard people say, particularly if they've been sick, if they've had some sort of a cold or flu or something like that, and they end up taking antibiotics, and a course of antibiotics, they usually say when you're finished with your antibiotics, you should be eating yogurt to replace the healthy bacteria that is in the gut. In the stomach, in the gut, that digests your food, and they say so to eat yogurt. And I suppose to eat kefir is even more enhanced. Are we talking about, is this what we refer to as probiotics?
It is. Actually, anything fermented is full of nourishing probiotics, whether it's a vegetable or a fruit chutney. Even I make mayonnaise and I lacto-ferment the mayonnaise, and it becomes full of probiotics. Mm-hmm. The kefir is very high in probiotics. And of course, all of the probiotics combat any kind of candida that would set up in our systems, mm-hmm. which is actually, you know, a bad bacteria. And candida can really cause some really bad things, from outward signs of nail fungus, if you've ever known or had nail fungus, or if you've ever had dandruff, that's actually a bad bacteria. And the probiotics in the yogurt and the kefir and the fermented vegetables will actually overtake the bad bacteria and kill it. And here's another just little interesting tidbit about fermentation and maybe kefir in particular. If you want to use a raw egg in your smoothie, and a lot, this has been popular with some people, and some people are afraid to put a raw egg in something like that. But the lactobacilli in kefir will kill salmonella, it will kill E. coli, it will kill some of these bad things that make us sick.
Mm. Really?
It's very, very interesting.
It is very interesting. Now, that brings me back to the crazy laboratory experiments that are going on in the kitchen. Khani has on the bench, it's like a pet now. It's like a pet that she feeds.
Oh, it's
should have a name. Does it have a name? It should have a name.
I can think of a name.
You can think of a name. It's just explain to the listeners what this thing is that you're feeding every day. And kefir grain, the grains.
The grains, yeah. Well, they're just like, they look like little tiny cauliflowers, don't they, Devorah? They're just,
they do.
They do. They are very cute. I speak very fondly of them because they are. They're part of the family now.
And they are alive.
And they multiply out of control in summer. My goodness, I can hardly keep up. It's just incredible how much they multiply. So basically they need fresh milk every day. We're blessed enough to have goats here, and I milk two goats every day. And so I use the fresh raw goat's milk in my kefir. And basically it sits on the bench. And when I first started this, and with fermenting as well, I really had to get over that whole thing of leaving things out on the bench. I mean, I've always been told it's got to go back in the fridge, put it back in the fridge, it's got to go in the fridge because it'll breed bad bacteria. And I really did have to, it really was for me a paradigm shift, go, no, it's okay to leave that there on the bench. It's doing its work. That's where it's working.
And like Jono said earlier, for how many thousands of years prior to, say, maybe the 1920s, no one had refrigeration.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so it is. It's going back to the way it used to be and not being so reliant on modern appliances, I suppose. But, yes, I do love my kefir grains. And I'm learning to do lots of different things with them. This morning I had a kefir banana and a little bit of maple syrup smoothie. But I do like to put an egg in my smoothie too, but nobody else around here seems to like that. So.
Just sneak it in there, they'll never know.
But actually what the thing that everybody likes here is the kefir cream cheese.
Oh, the cream cheese is great. The cream cheese is delicious. And Khani's been doing that with cracked pepper, sea salt, and chives, chopping up the chives and mixing that through. And it is just
gourmet.
Gourmet, that is the word. Yes. It is gourmet. It just makes everything.
And it's free.
So now this is now talking about the grains, and Dev, you mentioned this as well. No one knows really where they came from.
Well, now me being a Karaite, I believe they were created on day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. Mm-hmm. But no one actually knows. And that's what's, there's so many stories. And of course, they're myths. One myth is that Muhammad brought them down from heaven. There's another myth that an angel brought them to Noah, for Noah and his family to have on the ark, because they would have had milk. They would have had probably goats and cows.
Sure.
So, but those things are myth. The only thing that we do know is that they've always been around, and people have them. And I'm sure there's been times where they were not as prolific as they are becoming more prolific today. We do know that there's a story from Russia, and I want to say that it's somewhere between the late 1800s and early 1930s, where a prince in Russia had a lot of kefir grains and wouldn't share them with anybody. And a plot was hatched to send a pretty woman to, you know, get some of these kefir grains, and it didn't work out well, and he actually ended up kidnapping her, but they got her back, and all was well. But as part of his punishment, they made him give up some of his kefir grains, and they say that because of that, that's where they really begin to be, you know, disseminated in more parts of the world. I don't even know if that's exactly a true story, but it's repeated a lot.
Wow.
Sounds like a good movie.
Yeah, that'd be a great movie.
Oh, and what another heartwarming story that I read that was a true story. A gentleman came to the United States. He must have been in his early 20s, and it would have been around the time of 1930, 1933. He came through Ellis Island from some Slavic country to make his new home in America, and I'm sure to escape some tyranny at that time. And he brought kefir grains with him. And on his dying bed, many, many years later, I'm sure he was in his 80s or 90s, one of his last things that he said to his family on his deathbed was, who is going to take care of the grains? Who's going to keep them and keep them going? This is something that was known in families to, you know, to bring health and longevity, and they have we know now they have antibiotic properties. They have anti-cancer properties. Mm-hmm. They have so many things. And this man, this was a he had been it had been impressed upon him young that these were very important.
Mm.
It's amazing.
So now kefir grains are not everyone's going, well, if I want kefir grains, you're saying they're so healthy for me and it can help preserve my food. Is there? I mean, not everybody knows where they can get some. Not everybody has them. In some parts of the world, it's just a very unusual thing to try and track down because you can't, as far as I'm aware, here in Australia, and Khani, tell me if this is right, you can't buy it in Australia. You can't purchase it.
No, you can. You can purchase them. They're very expensive, but it is possible to purchase them. But a little bit of digging around, if you start, so there are many, many forums, you know, the alternative health forums, that sort of thing, somebody will have some kefir grains near you. It's just, and it, with the internet, it's just so much easier. Mm. And it's basically just putting your ear to the ground and finding out who's got them.
And then now you did this and you found somebody who was maybe 3-4 hours away from us and they very, very enthusiastically put some in a jar, sealed it with wax and sent it to you in the mail.
In the mail, that's right. And I received those back in probably June of last year, and they were I think I got about a teaspoon amount.
Mm-hmm.
And during the winter months, I have to admit I was a bit discouraged. They didn't really take off, and I was wondering why I was doing this and why it was just taking so long. And come spring, oh my goodness, it just exploded.
Dev, it was like, have you seen the movie The Blob? It was like that, and it was overtaking the kitchen, and it wanted, so we had to do all sorts of things with them and use them very quickly and divide it up and give it to friends and all sorts of stuff because this thing just wanted to consume the house. Now, how did you go about getting yours? How did you come across yours?
I actually went on the internet and found a lady here in the United States who sells them, and she sent me, she has goats, and she had been using hers in goat's milk,
mm-hmm.
and she sent me about the same amount, about a tablespoon or so, for a certain amount of money, and it's a shame to me because they, you know, they do multiply. You could be given, you know, lots of them away. And I do give them away. I don't charge for them because we get so many. Mm. But I got mine from her, and they have been so prolific. I do want to just add that you mentioned winter, summer, you know, difference. One of the differences is that your ambient room temperature will be the real key as to how fast or slow the kefir makes.
Mm-hmm.
If your room temperatures are around 70 degrees Fahrenheit, they'll make, you know, pretty fast. If it's more than that, they'll make extremely fast. And if it's lower than that, if it's in the 60s or 50s Fahrenheit, they will take a couple of days to actually make the kefir.
Mm. Okay. Now, Dev, you don't have to use goat's milk, do you?
No. The only thing that I would tell anyone is cow's milk, goat's milk, sheep milk. The thing about it is if you can get raw, that's the very best.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can only get what's known as the high heat pasteurized milk, that's not good because that's basically dead milk.
So that's the milk in the Tetra packets, is that the one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it usually says, in the United States it's labeled, I think it's UTH or something like that.
Right.
And that's ultra high heat. There's also a high heat. And I'm very blessed to be able to find a low heat pasteurized that's non-homogenized.
Oh,
so the cream goes to the top. It's beautiful.
Nice.
Well, we actually in Australia there is a cow, an organic cow's milk product that is non-homogenized.
Mm.
So that would probably be a good option. But I have been known to just use straight supermarket cow's milk if I've completely run out of goat's milk, and it seems to be okay too.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. It won't be quite as good, won't be quite as healthful, but it'll
but it's
work.
It's still probably better drinking at kefir. Then straight.
It is. Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah.
So I have a question. So if people don't know where to get kefir, if they want to ferment their foods, do they have to have kefir to ferment?
Not vegetables. Actually, that's the amazing part of that statement that's in Nourishing Traditions is that the The lactic acid producing bacteria, the lactobacilli, are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. You really need your kefir grains for milk. There's also something known as water kefir grains that you can use with water and sugar. That's my only issue with them, is that you do use quite a bit of sugar with them, and the fermentation process does remove some of the sugar because they do eat it, but you still are left with glucose changed into fructose, and there's still some in there. And I personally am trying to cut sugar out of my my life.
Sure.
So it's not so good for me. But if you want to make, say, sauerkraut or any kind of fermented vegetable, all you need is some salt and some water.
Salt and water, because you say that these
lactobacilli
is everywhere, is what you're saying. How do people get it from everywhere and get it into their foods for the purpose of fermenting? How does that happen?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, because it just happens. It's just the way Jehovah created it to work. That's another amazing thing. All you need to do is put your vegetables in a clean jar, put some salted water, and I actually don't use a lot of salt for my taste. It should be salt to taste, and my taste is generally runs about 2 teaspoons per quart jar that I make with vegetables, and I just put a lid on it, and in about 2 to 3 days, it's fermented. It's amazing.
I think having the lid on too, I think that's part of the process, is it not? Just keeping it, or could you do it without a lid?
Well, it's interesting because I don't use grains in my diet, but sourdough bread, the way you make the sourdough starter is just by putting flour and water together.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of people only put maybe a cloth on top of that jar. I don't think they put a lid on. I think they just use a loose cloth. And the lactobacilli that are present in the air everywhere is what makes the sourdough starter.
Mm.
Isn't that amazing? That's by the way, that's another experiment, that's another pet in the kitchen at the moment that Franny's got going on there.
The sourdough starter.
Sourdough starter. And okay, so it's already in the food, whether you like it or not, it's there, and you ought to like it. And so what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, and Khani, you've done this as well with sauerkraut, you put it, put your, and in this case we're talking about cabbage, right? You also put caraway seed, and now that's a recipe in Nourishing Traditions.
Yes, it is.
That's the one you got, that's in there as well. And you put it into the jar, water and salts. And how much salt do you use?
Well, Sally Fallon of Nourishing Traditions actually uses a lot more salt than you, Dev. And I'm not sure why, whether that's a preserving thing or not. But I tend to put about a tablespoon in. But we tend to like it quite salty too, I suppose.
Don't mind it like that. And you leave it with the lid on, you leave it sealed on the bench, not in the fridge, on the bench for at least 3 days.
2 to 3 days.
To 3 days. And then it's basically pickled, right?
It is. It tastes very pickled, yes. And it is. It's absolutely delicious condiment.
It goes with everything. It's well, maybe not ice cream. But it goes with, I could try that. But
I could try that. Kefir ice cream and sauerkraut.
Oh, that is the next experiment, by the way, Dev, is kefir ice cream.
Because of her.
Oh, that's one of your things.
Yes.
Oh, quick. Okay, now, Deb, you're going to have to come back on and share with us some particular recipes and how to do it. I know there's a lot of that on your website in videos, YouTube videos as well, which make
it... We just shot those in the kitchen just for friends like y'all to be able to see how simple it is.
Yeah, it certainly is. So, Dev, can I ask you, what just from your experience and your own testimony, has eating this way improved your health?
It has completely turned mine and my husband's health totally around. My husband didn't even, bless his heart, I didn't think there was anything wrong with him either, but he has noticed amazing improvements in his health. I actually had some health issues that some of them are gone. Some of them are still on their way out. I was, I would say, much unhealthier than my husband. And maybe not even as, you know, somebody else might have said, well, I wouldn't have pegged you for unhealthy. But our health has turned around so greatly that we're still astonished about it. And I have three very close friends that I, of course, ran to with this when I was so excited. And initially, of course, because Torah is my focus and my passion, I ran to them. I said, do you know what Jehovah's done? Do you know what he's done? You know, these things are so healthy. And they began to try them and really come up with some amazing recipes, fermented vegetables, different things. And in just a few months' time, their health has turned completely around. And I have to say that probably it's not just the fermentation, even though I think the kefir and the fermentation is a very large part. All of us also have come away from grains and sugar. Mm-hmm. So that's got to have something to do with it as well.
Mm. Yes, yes. Well, I'm actually off the wheat now too. Jono and some of the children are still eating spelt. But I have been off the wheat for about 3 months, and I am feeling so much better. I don't have those cramping stomach aches anymore. I don't have the bloatedness that I used to have. The feeling of just the tiredness in the morning when I'd first wake up, things like that. I have far more energy than I used to have.
And the constant appetite, by the way.
The constant appetite.
The kids would have because of the amount of wheat in their diet and that feeling of always being hungry. That's something that we're definitely going to have to touch on. Mm. But let me just take a step back. With our family, how have you noticed that and fermented foods have, I mean, we're talking about a healthier gut flora, right?
Yes.
And are we talking about a boosted immune system? Is this?
Well, from our experience, I believe so. We don't often get very sick. But I have noticed since I've been fermenting that as soon as somebody gets a runny nose or a bit of a scratchy throat, I'll just up their sauerkraut or try and force them to drink a bit more kefir, and it does more times than not knock
who
it on
do
the
force?
Head.
You don't force them,
who? Jonah.
Oh, Jonah. but it does. It symptoms seem to last. Not as long, and sickness seems to be much rarer in our family.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of eating right. We don't eat virtually any processed food anymore. We've definitely cut right back on the wheat. We're eating fresh fruit and vegetables as much as we can. The fermented foods and the kefir, and I think it's all just part of the story. But it definitely is, and I mean, I almost see fermented foods now as medicine.
I do too. Can I give you a short list from our experience and my three close friends? And I honestly do realize that somebody may hear this and say, yeah, right. But I'm being very, very honest here. And I'm going to go from the small to the large. Our dandruff is gone. Mm. My husband and I no longer have dandruff. We no longer take any kind of antacid tablets at all. After any meal, there's no more acid reflux whatsoever. Mm-hmm. There's no more stomach bloating. We've both lost weight. I've lost more than my husband has. He didn't really need to lose weight, and I do, and it's coming off very, very easily. Mm-hmm. Neither one of us, this is winter time in the United States. It's January 31st, and winter colds and things and flus. I actually even go online and look, and they have these maps that say, okay, there's an outbreak here. We've not been sick at all. Mm-hmm. We started our kefir about 5 months ago, and then our fermented vegetables. We've not even been sick at all. I am no longer taking blood pressure medicine. Mm-hmm. I've come off of that. That's one of the really big things in the kefir, is it's been proven to lower blood pressure.
That's wonderful.
One of my close friends, her thyroid, now this is unbelievable, her thyroid is beginning to regain some function.
Wow.
She had been on, because it didn't function at all, she had been on some thyroid medication for a number of years, and the doctor told her just last week that she's regaining some function there.
Isn't that amazing? So we're talking about hormone replacement therapy is what she was on, right? Is that what we're talking about, or...?
Well, a thyroid hormone, yes.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think it's a synthetic, which, you know, she would love to not have to do that.
Sure.
Mm.
You know, anybody would. That's definite.
So is she off that medication now?
She's not off of it yet, but they did cut it down. Her dosage down. And the doctor was actually, even though this is a more of a naturopathic doctor style wise, it still surprised her. It took her aback that she was able to get this kind of results in such a short amount of time. Because we're talking just a few months.
It's incredible. Yeah, and it doesn't take long, again, to develop a healthy gut flora that enhances your health and diminishes the bacteria and so forth in your gut that shouldn't be there, that is potentially harmful to you.
That's right. And it diminishes your dependence on synthetic drugs.
Mm.
Oh, I don't want to ever go back to any kind of pharmaceuticals. And I now have true hope that can happen for me.
That's wonderful.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And that's the hope that we want to give to the listeners and encourage them to experiment with these things. And I'd like to encourage listeners to go to the website. That's culturedkaraite.blogspot.com. Cultured with a K. culturedkaraite.blogspot.com. Dev, thank you so much for coming on The Truth to You and sharing with us just an introduction of what fermented foods are, what kefir is. We really appreciate you coming on, and I'm hoping that you'll return and maybe we can look at some particular ingredients and recipes that we can encourage people to try. Would you do that?
Oh, I can't thank you enough. I would be delighted. Also, I would even like to bring out another time some things in the Torah that I think indicate some culturing and fermenting in the Torah.
Excellent.
That would be wonderful.
Let's do that. Let's do that again sometime very, very soon again. Thank you, Dev, for coming on to Truth to You. And Chani, thank you for coming on to Truth to You and for making me all this delicious fermented foods. I feel much better for it.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Truth to You. Be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's word. Shalom.